Record, and we are recording. Isaac Hoffman, hey. Welcome. I'm Devin. Hey. Yes, it's very, very nice to meet you. We've never met in real life. Yeah, what a pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. And if you want, because I would be happy to kind of introduce you, but I don't know much about how you would relay, you know, your life's work, if you like to, you know, on an elevator pitch level. So if you want to tell myself and the viewers, you know, what's good and what you're up to, then we can maybe get into it, man.
Yeah. So usually I like to explain where my experience comes from, and my experience comes from a lifetime first of my dad taking me out as a kid camping on the beaches of California, when you could camp on the beach and have fires and such. And then it continued further with doing a degree way long after that, doing a degree in outdoor adventure leadership for Southern Oregon University. And that's where I kind of saw you giving an interview to my friend Justin. And so I reached out to you. And I was like, oh, cool. He's doing it to a person like me, you know? So I was like, I might fit in there. And I really feel that I have a good opinion on, you know, and a good experience to share with people through what I learned as a part of the Outdoor Adventure Leadership program at Ashland. And I got a degree there also in video production, which has helped me form my outdoor experience in a way where I can shoot it. And that's what I want to do, is I want to eventually, it would be cool to do some adventure photography and videography. That's one thing that I'm doing right now, is I'm shooting a documentary called For the Love of It. And it's all about extreme sports. Why you do extreme sports, the who, what, when, where, and why of it. And why do people like, you know, Mothers Against Extreme Sports and all these crazy people like that on that I think are crazy on Facebook and social media, why do they say we have a death wish and such? So it goes really deep into that. And that's one thing I did learn there through the degree I got as a video production student. And also after that, I was lucky enough to become a raft guide on the Rogue River. And I did that guiding for one season, and I got about 500 miles of river time in, which is really cool to at least have one experience going down the lower Rogue on the Wild and Scenic, Devin, if you've ever done it. Or if you haven't,
I suggest
definitely doing it. You go to all these old lodges that, like, yeah, presidents and like John Wayne and all these crazy people have been to, that you're like, whoa, really? They've been down this river on these same rapids and shot these same rapids, which is really cool to experience. So, after that, that was in 2017. I did that. I graduated in 2015. After that, I went to China. I applied. I said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to apply myself somewhere, somewhere far instead of somewhere near. And sure. I've always wanted to travel. So I applied at Insight Adventures, and Insight Adventures is one of the leading companies in the outdoor industry there in China, in Yongshuo, China, and that's Southern China. And so I went over there, and I had to get my visa, and I had to get my passport, and it gave me a really good experience in meeting other cultures and opening my eyes up to other places in this world too. So that's a little bit about myself recently. And anything basically before my OAL degree was kind of just like, I didn't climb much, and I played a lot of football. And that's why I went to college, was to play football. And I cracked my head open and split it right down the middle, not playing football, but skateboarding. Shouldn't have been doing that. So I couldn't play football anymore because of that injury. So in college, I found the Outdoor Adventure Leadership Program and started doing that. And it's changed my life.
Wow. Wow. How exciting. So many points that I wanted to ask you about. What a bummer that there's these communities that you were mentioning. Like everybody's heard about MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, right? But I guess The Mothers Against Extreme Sports. That's funny. I don't doubt it for a second.
That would make sense technically, the Mothers Against Drunk Driving. But yeah, there's one Mothers Against Dirt Biking, I think, or Motocross. Yeah. Yeah, which I don't understand.
Here's my kind of polar view on that. My sober, play both sides view on that. On the one hand, bunch of spoil sports, right? Bunch of fucking, Kyle's mom, bunch of just malcontents. Being said, I growing up, knowing my personality type, I'm definitely kind of, too much is not enough, right? Kind of person. Knew that if I got into either of these two things before I was, old and reasonable, I would have been dead. And those were guns and motorcycles. So I don't fuck with either of them. Like I have a healthy respect for both, but I don't, I don't get.
Definitely. I like to dirt bike. That's why I don't get why they're against dirt biking.
Right.
But yeah, I wouldn't get on a Kawasaki or a Gixxer actually myself, because I think it's just dangerous crossing the road. People say, how can you go climb up that cliff, without a rope? And it's just like, how could you not wear your seatbelt and drive like a maniac around here and have road rage?
Right. Right. Yeah. The thing I used to say that I thought was funny, that was a pithy response to anything about, a current endeavor being classified as dangerous, is like, because it's true, life will kill you, all things perfect, life's gonna kill us, just life, just itself, so I just found that was an easy way to end those conversations, because those are uncomfortable conversations, aren't they, about why one does what they do. It's like, it's a pretty deep cut. It's interesting to hear that you're as passionate as you are about, let's say, answering that question or defending those, if you like, that have that same kind of passion for something that may or may not be looked at as dangerous, let's say. But see, interestingly, I my brain goes on a tangent with it, right? Fractals out. But I see a really beautiful point to be made. And that is, and the way that I do it for myself, try to get to these interesting points, is just play the farthest opposite, of two opinions, like play the most extreme opinion on the one side and then play the other extreme opinion on the other side. And on the one side, of course, what we're talking about is the variety of human experience in the, natural setting. And on the one side, there's, extremely, frenetic, manic, like expansive activities where we can fly with kites and, ski down mountains and raft the river. On the other side, there's these real, sitting at a desk or whatever, right? So like the point I'm trying to make is, if either one of those extremes is taken as the guiding principle, although I would definitely defer to the more of the one that seats itself in the aesthetic of dancing.
Yeah.
Dancing.
The way I ask the question is, what is adventure to you? And I want to ask you that question actually at the end of the conversation.
Yeah, I'll
let you have the floor, of course. But the way I am asking it in my documentary is, what's adventure to you? And adventure, I have my own definition of it, but I can't help it. I like to take Yvon Quinard's, and he says adventure is when plan A turns into plan B. He says people overuse that word adventure.
Right.
And they say we're going out on an adventure, and it's like a day hike to where they've been a million times. That's technically not an adventure. Now, if you get lost on that one and you've never been down a road, boom, then there's your adventure.
Yeah. It hints at something that I think is an ever-present reality, and that is to step outside of one's comfort zone is a meaningful phrase, because it's not just solely internal, one's comfort zone. We pattern out our experience externally inside of a comfortable rhythm. And I think the people that tend to find joy in adventure, let's say, or pursue whatever that is for them, you know, as opposed to shying away from it for the most part, are people that recognize that, like, when we put ourselves in a position to fail, it's terrifying. We can fail. Failing hurts. Failing can hurt. I mean, if it's an MMA match, it's going to hurt, right? Failing can be destructive, terribly overwhelming and crushing. But the only chance that we can ever succeed, the only chance that we can ever move forward, the only chance that we can ever win are when we set ourselves up for failure. Right. There has to be that welcome of all possible outcomes. And then hopefully with the right amount of courage, the, you know, evocation of the best possible outcome.
What happens is if you fail and you fail again and you know how you failed, you learn from that, then you go do it again, then you shouldn't have that fear to fail again, because you're like, okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm going to succeed now. So once that is removed and instead, that's why I know it's a joke, but it's safety third. And what I mean by that is you have safety in the back of your mind. You've already thought this out. You've already gone through your process. And that's what these mothers sometimes don't understand. And that's why they're so worried. It's because they don't understand that we've gone through the calculations of this. And in our mind, there's nothing else, like Bruce Lee says, but to do.
Yeah, you've gone through all the iterations of failure to lead you to the point of having a much larger potential for success. And then you can go out and execute on that success. And yeah, I agree. I like, at least with an earlier premise or earlier point you were making, let's say, is, you know, there's people saying why we shouldn't, people saying why, you know, a person can't, people saying what's to be expected, people saying what's safe, what's easy. Well, yeah, sure. And that's great, you know, in a synthetic environment, that's great in a simulation, that's great in, you know, trying to eliminate the possibility of risk or negative outcome, but that's just not life. Life is going to have negative outcome anyway.
Yeah.
We're all going to have negative outcome anyway. So, so why not try to dance with that other side? And of course, anybody who does outdoor recreation, I think, does de facto, but I mean, there's people that get there to adventure without being outdoor recreational people. And I am more on the side of saying, hey, I found a way that has done these things for me, has given me adventure in my life, and I want to talk about it.
Yeah.
I think it's worth noting is that there's people that achieve that without ever going to the forest. Like, and it's a harder point to make, right?
Like the flow state. That's why it's not only outdoor, outdoor adventure, outdoor extreme sports that I would like to do with my documentary. It's also fire spinners, and it's also, I want to include stuntmen and some other, types of action adventure sports, because like you're saying, it matters all across the board in those two. You don't have to exactly be out in the wilderness to experience, you know, an adventure, that fight or flight feeling that you get. We all want the feeling of flight, you know?
right. That's well said. It's like you're getting into that state, and it doesn't matter if you're in a boardroom or, you know, a class 4 rapid or whatever, you're going to crush it, right? If you're in that state. And then I think learning about that is super important. For whatever reason, a lot of the conversations that I've been having doing this YouTube thing has been around that concept. And it's not necessarily something that I at least was conscious of bringing to the table as to be concerned with or talked about, but I suppose I am. I mean, I suppose it's, mm-hmm. it just tends to be what I start fucking talking about despite myself. And so it's interesting to be able to connect with guys like yourself, Isaac, because you're out there really, you're doing something that's important for the community, if you like, for all of the people out there that are saying, I can't stand being told what to do. I can't stand doing the same thing all the time. I'm going crazy. People, you know, I feel like I've got anxiety or depression, or, you know, I should be on these drugs, or give me a break. It's 2019. That seems to be the story too often. I mean, too fucking often. And here you are really as a counterpoint to that.
Yeah, it gives them an outlet. You see these people come on the river as a guide, and they've never experienced anything like this. And to give them that experience of the outdoors, you see some of these kids, that's what they want to do every season now. They want to come back and go rafting. Right. And man, that's special right there to be able to help the kids with that. And that was one of the things that drove me to do a documentary about it. What was that feeling right there? And one of the things that I would kind of like to bring up, because I have it on my mind, is when you're talking to Justin last time about him, actually in, I think it was India or Nepal, and, someone was trying to charge him to ski there. And I think it was illegal for them to do that. And it's just interesting. I want to talk about the ethics of the outdoor industry and how that's occurring, because the outdoor industry is popping up everywhere now. And it's so prevalent everywhere that there's these black market industries popping up, just like in China. I realized as a guide, you have to watch out, because there's these companies over there that will hire you as a guide and basically screw you over. They won't pay you what they say they'll pay you, because they pay you on something called WeChat. And WeChat technically is just trading dollars over the air. And sometimes it won't always work out. And also, they kind of use you, the Westerner, as their stand-up. You know what I mean? You'll go in there and you'll do the briefing.
Front man.
You'll do the briefing for them, and then they don't want you there anymore because you don't need to be there. That actually, I learned that some of these companies are getting more money because we are there as their front man, and they're not necessarily giving it back to the guides.
Yeah. Well, even the Chinese can do capitalism pretty good, huh?
Yeah, man. I'll tell you what, dude.
Yeah, I believe it. I have a kind of a permanent bad taste in my mouth for corporate America and, frankly, corporate behavior worldwide. I mean, I will get into it if you're at all interested in hearing that. But I'm more intrigued with talking about this real kind of glowing thing that we're talking about in your passion and what you're talking about. And I wanted to make one point about at least my relationship with what I think is the same thing. And that is, you know, I grew up skiing, right? I that was one of the great gifts that my parents gave to me in my life, is they got me in ski lessons when I was just a super little tiny kid, because they were like at Club Med and they were doing their thing, and God bless them, and they're like, just put Devin in the place and they'll you know, take care of him. And it was the best thing ever, because I started a long term, I mean, up to the present day, right, a lifelong relationship. Justin and I were talking about the at least I thought we made the point fairly well, the reality that these outdoor pursuits tend to really be, in a certain way of looking at it, a relationship with a place, you know, and that's a really beautiful thing. It's like an existentially sacred thing, right, if you think about it. So anyway, I really fell in love with skiing and have kind of honored that my whole life, and had just so many amazing times with friends, with you know, lovers, with my wife now, my family. It's just been a joy in my life, skiing, right? Well, here's an interesting thing that I think is worth saying, only now as a young man, but for the last about 10 years, also, I've had this understanding of the responsibility to honor skiing. And the way that I've chosen to do that in my life up until this point is mainly ski patrolling. So I was a volunteer for several years. I've worked as a paid patroller, as that's my job, 9 to 5, whatever, for 4 years. But see, for me, and the reason I bring it up is because I think there's an analog to your pursuit as a filmmaker. And I think there's an analog to Justin, you know, and you're a guide as well, I understand, on Whitewater, and Justin's, you know, a guide. I know you guys, you know, are probably in the same community in ski guiding or river guiding, at least I would guess. I think that part of what births a guide or an emergency medical person, or a, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways to do it, right? Being a teacher or being, there's something about those experiences that at the face of them are pointless and dangerous, and to be, you know, you know, people that are not capable or otherwise unfit to be discouraged from even trying are so healing, are so health-giving, are so consumed and saturated with life force that the people that do it just a little bit, people that are just introduced to it, are like leveled up, are like, they like their lives improve. That's something that has just been punching me in the face in the last few years. Like the realization that I'm getting older, you know, I don't know if my best ski turns are behind me or in front of me, but you know, I love it so much. And I know how powerful it is and how wonderful it is. Like the ski patrolling part starts to be more of a call. Not that free skiing isn't, just that it's a way of making good on it, you know? And I wonder if you feel kind of similarly with your documentary that you're working on. Like it's an honoring of it.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I feel like my friend told me this one time. I was telling her, and I'll hook you up with her name because she's definitely someone you might want to have a conversation with. I told her what I wanted to do one time. I said I was going to circumnavigate Klamath Lake when it was frozen.
And oh, wow. Says,
wow, I don't think anyone's ever done that. I said, no, I know. I don't think anyone's ever done that either. People have crossed it, but never gone around just the outside all the way around it during the winter. And she says, you know what? You really do need something. I've always felt, Isaac, that you were going to do something that would set you aside, kind of like that. And I haven't done that yet, but I will. It's on that list. You know what I mean? It's off my goal list. But anyways, that's what my documentary is, basically kind of an outlet of how of showing basically something that will set me apart. You know what I mean? Not just me, but sets the outdoor industry apart. Why do we do it? It asks the question why we do it. You know what I mean? And yes, it's there's this joy that I get out of it when I'm there in the moment. You know, either filming it or doing it myself, and it's really great. And it's one of the reasons why I brought up kind of the ethics of it earlier, because I'm so passionate of it, and I can't. And that's the first thing I think about is people kind of screwing over the industry. But I would love to talk way more about what you're saying, you know, kind of the awe of it, you know what I mean? And the shock value from it, because you get people out there experiencing the outdoors, and it's something you've never seen before in their life. It changes them definitely, or it can, if you let it, because sometimes it's hard for people to adapt and to be out there, you know, in that environment, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what to say. It's one of those things that is so sobering to me that when I start to think about how good a job I'm doing at it, I start to kind of feel shitty. It's like, fuck, like I could do a lot better, you know?
What mountain did you ski on?
Just recently, or what do you mean?
No. What did you grow up on?
Oh. I mean, I was not born and raised close to the mountains. I was born
what
in
mountain, what mountain? What mountain?
We would go to we would go to Tahoe.
Tahoe, nice.
I'm going to Tahoe.
Yeah. I grew up in the Bay Area in Oakley, California. So Tahoe was about an hour drive. Very expensive. I never went at all, except for maybe a few times when I was a kid. So I didn't really start my snowboarding career until I got into college. And it's not really much of a career, you know what I mean? It's following my friends around that are sponsored and having them teach me backflips whenever I can. But it was really fun because the ski camaraderie and the community is really a good one to get involved with early on. And I feel like even if I would have gotten it involved early on, I probably would have went way more into snowboarding. Not that I regret it at all, because I'm a climber.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, I hear you. That's a good point. I think that these sports, you know, these pursuits, adventure, just trying to distill it into something that you know carries across all verticals, if you like, but let's just say skiing and mountain biking, at least from what I've seen, have such vibrant communities. There's so many people that are out there that really care, that really are spending hours of their lives, you know, whether it's building the trails or you know, getting the mountain open and shoveling snow or whatever. Like people that are not going to get any thanks, people that are not in the fucking weekly local paper, people that don't have 100,000 views on YouTube, just people. And those are the people that are digging motherfuckers out of their driveway every day to get to the mountain to start the thing. Those are the people, you know, packing the lunches and all that stuff. And I don't know, man, like the more that I think about this, the more it kind of is a humbling thought, because I realize that part of the thing that I think a lot of skateboarders, snowboarders, skiers to a lesser degree, because we're a more buttoned up crowd, but surfers for sure. Is this feeling like to do these things is to be an outcast, just de facto, just that's what it is. If you're wasting your MFing time going to the skate park, you know, when you could be, you know, and there, I think we all have that narrative at least somewhere in our psyche, and that's just a down, just a fucking shitty thing. Not that that's any great tragedy, you know, people I know have been through worse, but I think that the reason I bring that up, that I find some real light at the end of the tunnel on, is in truth, these pursuits really do build community. In truth, when you decide, hey, I'm going to be a snowboarder or whatever, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to make it happen, you know, that are going to help you, that are going to be there to support you, that are going to tell you how good you are, that are going to challenge you to get better, that are going to, you know, like, and that, you know, it's something that I'm continually trying to ask to dance, if you like. It's something that I'm still to this day intimidated by. It's something that I still, when I'm shown the door to more involved with the community of skiers, let's say, just to use that example, because I am, you know, and have been, it's like, wow, like I got to go put my nice suit on, you know, I mean, it's all metaphoric, but like, you know, I'm involved with National Ski Patrol, or at least have been slightly over the years, right? And so I'll go and help when they do their OEC training. OEC is their analog to EMT. So there's emergency medical technician, which is like the 10-week course for just, you know, getting to be like an ambulance driver. OEC is kind of a similar.
I've had a few friends do that.
Yeah, you know OEC. Another one that you've probably been more around, woofers, WFR.
Yeah, right? I don't have my woofer, I have my WAFA, the Wilderness Advanced First Aid. It's the one right before that. And that qualified me enough to work over there for that job in China. And it's good still. It's good still till next year. It's good for another 2 years, technically. Till 21. Yeah, till 2000. So I can technically keep that, and just if that's all that, you know, they need, yeah, you know, I use that. But otherwise, yeah, I'd get that woofer. Definitely.
Right. Like, yeah. And OEC is just the same length. And it's tailored for ski patrollers, but it's the same curriculum basically. And you know, I'd like to say I'm down there at the class every fucking time, but you know, I get that just juggling life and relationships and, you know, daily sanity is a large inventory already for all of us.
Yeah.
And to be able to go and expand into really good, really solid communities. Like the respect for the community is there, even paramount to me trying to figure my shit out to go into there. So I guess all I'm saying is hats off to you. And, you know, I salute you that you're really deciding to get deeper into the adventure community. Let's say you're seemingly by your actions, just making an agreement with yourself where you're saying, hey, I value these communities of people that are out, you know, in whatever way and in whatever far removed way, helping me get on the river, helping me go and do the things that I like.
It's about value. Definitely. I agree with that. And how these communities and people are doing it, and the difference in how we did it as kids without all the cell phones and we were on pagers and all that, and without all the internet, and how kids do it now, because you're right, there was this, and there is this, like I heard kind of you mention, there is this kind of, I call it a stigmata, that you'll go nowhere skateboarding, you go nowhere rollerblading, you go nowhere as a surfer.
Isaac, I got to correct you. I'm sorry. It's just funny. Not stigma. Stigmata is the wounds in
what's it called?
It's called stigma.
Stigma.
Yeah. Stigmata is the you have wounds that are like Jesus.
So yeah. Anyways, it's a stigma. You know what I mean? And
yes, sir.
What I'm learning is that because of technology and because now there's a huge venue for these kids to get jobs and to be sponsored, and you got to watch yourself definitely in this industry of being sponsored. And that's one of the people I like to interview is, you know, are you sponsored? Are you not sponsored? Well, why? You know what I mean? And the difference between that. Why didn't you go pro? And some people are like, you know, I'm a localist, you know, I skate locally and yeah, I skate with the pros all the time, but I'm not going pro. And some people are the opposite of that. They have more of a drive for it. And that's definitely, I think, a good value in, you know, what I'm trying to demonstrate and to get across in my documentary, definitely.
Yeah. Well, some of my favorite surfers are not sponsored, but they don't compete. Like Jamie O'Brien, I really enjoy. Koa Rothman is up and coming. And the thing that they're doing that just affirms, I think, my belief, let's say, that doing these conversations are so fruitful and important because those guys are doing vlogs as well. And that's probably the majority of the content that I consume is just shit that I know is pretty much straight from the farm, if you like. Like, I'm telling you, dude, call me high strung or whatever, but I'll watch a daytime television show, once every, for as long as I can tolerate it. And about 2 minutes in, you know, 10 seconds into a commercial series, let's say, I'm like out of my mind. Like, how is it that we as people are so easily fucking dosed up on synthetic information? It drives me insane. Like, I fully recognize the reset that the natural world gives me to a place where I can function and have good conversations and so forth. And I've been out of my mind recently, so I apologize if I'm talking over you and stuff. But
no, don't worry about it.
You know what I'm saying? But God, my heart goes out to everybody, like people that are in a nursing home or something, or a person who, you know, is otherwise incapacitated and has to just listen to TV hours and hours. It's oh my God. Because, dude, it's a sad fact, but now
I was always more into movies, definitely.
You know?
Because of that. And it's probably one of the reasons that helped me probably be more outside. Just recently, my girlfriend was telling me about this TV show we were just watching on TV. I flipped through it, and I'm like, what is this? She's like, oh, this is the remake of an old show that used to be on. You don't remember it? We're the same age. So she assumed that I watched it as a kid. I said, no, no idea. And she's like, wow, this is a really popular one. And I go, no, it wasn't. She goes, yeah, you must have been out climbing a tree or something like that. Probably.
That's funny. Yeah. I love that.
Probably why I like to climb is because as a kid, I would climb. I love to climb trees. And I climbed to the top as high as I could go before the branches almost broke sometimes. And probably one of the reasons why climbing is my favorite sport. And then probably whitewater rafting after that. But it's weird. I grew a real early love for extreme rollerblading, aggressive rollerblading, inline rollerblading, if you know what that is.
Sure.
And so I love doing that too.
Do you do like half pipe or
oh yeah, half pipe, quarter pipe, 540s, misty flips, backflip, front flips.
Wow.
I want to learn a flip. My next thing is I want to get down my flips more. And I want to, and I have a goal written down. Also, I need to film another skate video because I haven't filmed a skate video in a while. And it's one thing I used to do all the time. and I haven't done it in a while, so I need to do that definitely. And it's a passion that I have that's I think helped me in outdoor sports, because I guess rollerblading is an outdoor sport, but it's helped me, I mean, in climbing, because you hit the deck so many times when you're rollerblading and falling, you know what I mean? Sure. And now I fall when I climb and hit the side of the wall, and I'm ready for it almost.
Right. You ever go to Castle?
Castle Crags. Yes, I have been.
Castle Crags up north, but Castle Rock in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
No, I have not.
Oh, dude.
No, I have not.
We're going to go this week. You got to, if you ever have the opportunity, make it down to Castle Rock to the South Bay to like San Jose area.
Nice. Okay. I looked up that area as a climbing area. Yeah. Because really cool. I have a Bay Area Top Rope book. I don't think it has that one in it, but it might.
I'd be surprised if it didn't. I would be surprised if Bay Area Top Rope didn't have Castle Rock and Indian Rock. It's just on the skyline.
Okay. Yeah, I did see that one in there then. Yeah. So I will check that out. Definitely. This weekend I'm headed up to Oregon to take care of some businesses. I actually live up there. I'm in California right now doing a summer job, working just to make money so that I can, help myself climb Shasta.
Yeah. You were telling me that you were going to climb Shasta, and we were scheduling this conversation around you climbing this weekend. So tell me what happened.
So I unfortunately didn't go. I went out of town just over camping on the Delta. I got some cool pictures up on my Instagram of that. Awesome. But other than that, yeah, I didn't really do the climb. Unfortunately right now, and that's why I'm working on this thing in Oregon, is I'm going up to Oregon to get a car. I'm buying it from my brother. That way I'll have my own wheels and I can do this thing myself, proper style. I'm kind of relying on rides right now to get me up there. And the first time I did it, actually, I took the train up there, which is fun. I recommend doing that. But if I have my own car, then I have more time to stay up there and actually do it the way I'd want, you know what I mean? Instead of having more of a time crunch because I have a ride coming or whatnot, you know?
Sure.
Well, so I did it.
I did it once,
my grandma said, "You're never sorry, Isaac. You can apologize or you can be forgiven, but sorry is for convicts or losers, and you're neither one."
I like that.
Right, so anyways, June 25th, I went for a summit of Shasta, and I got up right before Helena Lake at about 9,600 feet, and I don't know that for sure. I just asked some guy going by, and he gave me an approximation of where he was, so I took that because I stopped right there anyways. because I was told that the rangers up there were turning people back if you weren't up by the summit by 11, and I wasn't even to Helena Lake by 10:30 or before 10:30, so I knew I wasn't going to make the summit before noon, so I would get turned back because of a weather system coming in. So I just turned back, and I just left because of that weather system coming in, and I could see it the whole time as I was coming down, rolling around the mountain, coming in. Sure enough, when I got down to town, that's when it started raining.
How beautiful is Shasta?
Oh my gosh. It's definitely, I agree what they say. It's got a pool. It's got some sort of pool. My parents moved up to Klamath Falls, and I was going, I've been traveling past that mountain for years now since they've lived there, and I was going to school in Ashland. And ever since, that's what's made me want to climb that, because I started rock climbing and learning the trade a little bit, or, you know, the industry. Right. And how to, and B, I'm passing it every day, and the mountain's so beautiful, man. Yeah, I loved it. It was, for me, that's why I didn't really cry that much about turning around early that day, because any amount of success on that mountain was a success for me, and I was really happy with it, and I'm going to be stoked to go back and get it, you know, all the way.
So when are you thinking about to try to get a proper summit?
Not this weekend, because I'm going up to Oregon, but the weekend after that.
Okay.
Definitely.
How fun.
I plan on doing it solo, too.
You are going to go solo?
Yeah, that's what I was doing before, too. And I was getting a lot of looks and a lot of talk. Like, people were like, as I was going up, people would ask me, they'd give me a look and they'd just walk off. Or they'd like come over and they'd be like, oh, what's your turnaround time? Oh, and they were like quizzing me and stuff. And of course, I had all that information, you know what I mean? And where I was going to turn around and stuff. But I kind of got some looks I wasn't ready for because I was going solo. And most people go with a partner.
Most people go guided too.
Oh, yeah, guided. Yeah.
There's SWS and Shasta Mountain guides.
Yeah.
You went up Avalanche Gulch. And if you turned around at Helen Lake, you must have. I agree. There's something super accessible constituted by the divine that is Shasta it's something it's something that is not transmittable other than, I mean, I guess if you're a good poet or something, you could at least open the door, but to just be
there, John Muir, right?
You know, yeah, right. John Muir did a better job than most, right? Getting the word out, but yeah, for sure. I've had some neat experiences on that mountain.
I heard that's where John Muir died, actually. He was up there living in a woolly suit for the winter, and he got pneumonia, and he came back. Yeah, well, no, not that he died up there, but he got pneumonia there, and then he came back with pneumonia, and I think he died of that. But anyways, that was interesting. I hope I'm right on that one.
people talk about, or people ask the question fairly regularly, if you could have, you know, a beer with so many people, you know, who would they be or whatever, if you could, you know, be with somebody for so long. John Muir would be high on my list.
Yeah.
He just seemed like he was so far out that he just got it better than anybody. He just had decided that he was going to be an advocate for the sanctity of the outdoors, right? And he just did it. He did it so hard. Like, he just did it.
In that time, you couldn't do stuff like that. Wasn't you? You know what I mean? There was certain, like, society had plans for you. You couldn't just go out into the woods like you.
And look at what a big difference he made.
I mean,
his name is on everything, right? I mean, you know,
Muir Woods. I go out to Muir Woods, Muir Beach.
Yeah,
all that stuff up here.
Muir Street. Go to, you know, and you ever seen a picture of him?
But yeah, I've seen a big, huge beard, and him in his woolly suit. Oh yeah,
wild-eyed looking.
Yeah,
he just like, you know, just had those that mile-long stare, you know. You know who he reminds me of with the eyes? Is Rasputin. You ever seen a picture of Rasputin?
Yeah.
They just had that like, you know, those fucking eyes. And you're saying, Jesus, like, look at this. Yeah, but they very clearly. Intense,
very intense scowl. Not scowl, sorry.
Gaze. But
yeah, whatever. Yeah, gaze.
Intense gaze. Yeah, like they could look into something. Yeah. Yeah, well, bro, more power to you. You know, I don't know what to say. I'm jealous that you're going and climbing. I've been meaning to go and climb. We're in the Bay Area. I feel how it is with being satiated by even less than ideal when you get out and go do it. What I always say about surfing is all it ever takes is one wave. I just need to get one wave, and then I'm chill.
Right.
Rest of the session. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not stressed. You know, going out
do
there.
Do you climb in a gym? Also,
I just went and climbed, not regularly. I mean, I have over the years, but I just went and climbed at Planet Granite, I think it is, in Belmont with my buddy Nick Reimnitz.
I was told about that. Yeah.
Yeah. That's in the peninsula. And that was really fun. I got one of those, door frame, pull up bars. Off of like Craigslist for like nothing.
Oh, nice.
Those are cool. Dude, I just about broke myself, firstly. I'm in there doing, so I could do pull-ups, and then I figured out that I could do leg lifts. I could do like the fucking CrossFit, like get my legs all the way to the ceiling. And remember, it's like, you know, a foot and a half from the ceiling is the top of the door jamb, right? The door
jamb.
So I'm doing that, and I'm throwing my legs up and kicking the ceiling. Isabella, my wife, is in the bathroom at this time, and it's the hallway, you know, the door is just before the hallway. And I'm like trying to get her attention. I'm like, babe, look at me. You know, and I'm doing leg lifts, and I go to do another one, and I just pull really hard and, you know, contract my my core as hard as I can. Just harder than the last one, right? Just hard enough to, as I was on the way up, unhook the mechanism that holds the fucking pull-up bar to where
you bend too far back. Yeah,
bro. So I'm upside down, 5.5 feet off the ground, going up with my legs with my legs above my head. You know, like not even in good position for like a backflip. Like I couldn't see my landing. I wasn't fully upside down. I was just fucked enough that I couldn't get back to like cat back to my center, if you like, even if I knew what was happening. But the trippy part about it was I didn't know what was happening. I swear to God, I can recount the memory just as it happened, because I didn't have so much adrenaline that I blacked out. Like, I don't know if you've had that experience. I certainly have. But I had enough adrenaline where I was like thinking, what the so I did the rep, pulled with all I had, right? But I was getting farther and farther away from the ceiling. Why am I not hitting this? Why my feet hit the ceiling? And I just was trying to understand what was happening. My brain was trying to spin out a reason why the world was reacting the way it did. And then the next thing I knew, from the middle of my like head, like top of my neck, all the way to like halfway down my upper back, I just felt the impact all at once. It was just like, oh, and only thing that I think saved my spine in that potential for a serious trauma, like no bullshit, is that I just had armored myself enough with muscle up until that point. I'm no great big muscular person, but I have enough muscle fiber, you know, and a lot of slow twitch stuff from doing just being athletic my whole life, right? That when I needed to flex it, and then I was like in spasm for like hours, you know, just like, yeah, I think I fucked
ice, man, ice.
so yeah, got one of those things and, you know, started fucking around with that. But that's pretty much the closest I've been to putting in time on a wall. Although interestingly,
watch out for training. Yeah, training. I actually don't recommend training for climbing. The reason why I don't is because I do construction. So I'm literally swinging a hammer or using a Sawzall or flexing all the time and pumping myself out almost at work. So I'm ready to go by the time I go to the gym at the end of the day, if I did, or go climbing that weekend. You know, I wouldn't, don't really like to train much. And I guess that relieves me from potential accidents like that. Man, that's too bad.
No, so I mean, you know, it gave me fair understanding of the implement and the possibilities of using it. I was gonna say, interestingly, we just went to Reno and randomly, and the hotel that we stayed in, believe it or not, had a climbing gym, and not just a climbing gym, a badass climbing gym.
The biggest one in the West Coast, I believe, or in the United States.
Yeah, you know where I'm talking about.
Yep, I've been there.
Whitney Peak. Yeah, that was kind of cool.
And they got a whitewater park too. They divert the Truckee River in there. Did you go see that?
Kidding. No.
And no, I went over there with my boogie board and my fins, my Blunkett fins. Like I would go out boogie boarding in the ocean. Yeah. And I hit the water park, and literally you come down over these waves and paddle into them, and then you're just surfing back and forth on these big waves. And divert the Truckee River through. Yeah. It's really fun. Cool.
I love that. That's a super cool thing that different places do. Bend does that too. You ever been to Bend, Oregon?
I've been there. Yeah, I hurt my back there at that one on Bend because I tried crazy. This stunt that they do there is there's a part where the river comes in and gets diverted, and that part's higher, so you can jump off that part and into the wave. And so I saw these kids, these like 20-year-old kids doing this, and I'm only 32, so I'm like, I'm not old yet. I can do that. So I ran over there, boom, sent it off of it. Yeah. Hurt my back right when I landed. Boom, when I landed it, and that's the messed up part, was I landed it perfect, and I made it the whole transition too, and it looked cool. But if you were there, I hurt my lower back and could barely even swim in.
Yeah.
Area. Those water parks are a little dangerous sometimes.
Dude, we went to Great America. You ever been to Great America?
Yes. Yeah, I haven't been in a while.
I hadn't been in years and years and years. And I'm thinking to myself, I know all these fucking roller coasters. I can ride roller coasters. I'll take my wife on all these roller coasters. No problem. Oh my God. Like four roller coasters in, my neck and my back had just been shaking so much. Right? Yeah. You know, I'm just like, this isn't like, I don't want to ride roller coasters anymore. Like, fuck. Like my level of tolerance for, you know, violence at the amusement park is the fucking, you know, Mario Kart game, you know, if it has any force feedback about the level I'm trying to be at. But yeah, how funny, dude. I'm jealous. I'm excited for you. I think that your take it with a grain of salt, your movie making endeavor will be extraordinarily, you know, all the things, right? It'll be challenging, it'll be a growth thing. You feel me? It'll give you a lot, I think.
Thank you very much for that. And it's you know what I planned on it taking a while, but I'm still being impatient with it. I want to do it faster than not than needs to be done, but just faster than I'm doing it. Still, I've gotten about a handful of interviews, probably about six interviews, technically 6 days of shooting. I've got some good interviews from some really great guides over in China that have guided in the outdoor industry. And when you guide there, you take kids backpacking, climbing, kayaking, and stuff like that. And then I've also got some interviews from some guys on the front line of skydiving over here on the West Coast. One that I knew personally too, from being my brother's best friend back in the day. So it was cool. I got to go in with him to the wind tunnel turbine there in Union City, I believe. And he's one of the coaches, and I got to film him, of course. And he was, dude, it was so cool to have that access up there with the camera and be able to film him. Because for my documentary, that's really going to key in, because one of the things I want to key in on is how kids train now compared to back in the day. Back in the day when they didn't have those wind tunnels, you literally just went out there and your dad strapped you or whoever strapped you to you. And then you did that a few times. And then you got, you know, there was a certain way. It's a different way, you know, they did it totally. So that's one of the things I was looking to expose. And the next interview I want to get, actually, I've been thinking of, is some more like skateboarding, rollerblading, or even skiing. That's kind of not the good season for it. So it's summer season. So that's why I was thinking skateboarding and rollerblading. But I definitely would love to possibly even get an interview from you for the skiing portion of it, because I think skiing is a very important extreme sport for guys that have stepped it up to, what was that one guy doing? He was like skiing off of rocks and parachuting and stuff like that. So
yeah, Shane, all these Shane sports, McConkey.
Yeah. So how the evolution of them is so interesting. And thank you for that, for all that, you know, good positive energy. Definitely. I definitely need that.
Bro, when it's all you got to give, you know, you got to give it, right? Like, even if there's nothing other than one's voice to affect change in a greater sphere, you still got your fucking voice. You still got a voice. Use it, right? Use it. Use it. And even if it betrays you, use it to reach out to other voices. Use it to ask questions of voices you feel have done more and have more to say. You're right. I mean, there's all that wisdom out there to use as motivation. And I'm no better at actualizing on it than anybody else, but I see it, right? And yeah, like, the hope of the next wave, the chance of the next powder day, the opportunity to commune with the mountains, if you like, the peace that I get from being in the sea, that's mainly what animates me. Like, that's mainly what allows me to move forward, because a life of working hours and paying bills is just for the birds. Everybody fucking knows that. Everybody feels the same way. And you know, God bless the hustlers and the people that are out there, you know, cashing checks or whatever. But like, I don't know, man. Like, I at this point in my life feel more akin to a the community of people that you mean to interview and feel yourself a part of. And right. I that resonates with me more than, you know, who closed the most recent, you know, client for their insurance firm. It's, like, I just don't give a shit.
Amen. It's about self-realization for me, realizing where I'm at in life and being okay with that. And some people say, well, you're not setting your goals high enough. That's mediocre talk. Well, that I'm okay with that. Then I guess I'm mediocre or whatever, but I don't think about it that way. You know, definitely not. I think about it as being this motivational person so that others can benefit from that. And through guiding and through the outdoor industry, you can do that so much more easier than I would say a teaching job in a classroom, because yeah, you do kind of get that feeling of a high. I've seen these teachers on a roll, man. I had an anatomy teacher that would get on a roll, man. And he really loved it. And you could tell that was his high, you know what I mean? It was an adventure, even though he did triathlons, I guess. But I think so much more you get it out of adventure sports and out of the wilderness, just being out there too, you know, just going out. You don't need to be doing extreme sports, I guess, either.
Yeah, but there's, I mean, and I agree, I couldn't agree more. But then it begs the question, because I kind of have a contrarian mind where if I can wrangle it, I feel like I can, I'm onto something. But usually I'm just, you know, drowned in conflictions. But what was I going to say? So what is the benefit of going out and doing something that risks our life and limb in the outdoors that is so honorable? Because I would agree, I would argue that there is something existentially honorable about catching the biggest wave at pipe when it's triple overhead. Logically, I don't know that I can argue to it, but I know that seeing Andy Irons, you know, live his life and achieve what he did in surfing and just do the things he did has benefited my life. And that's so weird that it's so far removed, the initial action by him or whomever is this inspiration, let's say, and then me, this person who draws power from that. It's divorced from time. It's by time and space, by years and hundreds of, there are thousands of miles, and yet doesn't matter. Like, if you go out there and you put it on the line, it's all that matters.
When you're in that state and I'm climbing up that mountain, you know what I mean? And I'm rollerblading and I'm about to do that Misty flip out of, 12-foot wall, you know, and catch 6 feet of air, you know, over this obstacle. When you're in that moment right there, I think that feeling right there is what everyone wants. And your life is dull without it. You know what I mean? And so that feeling right there is what we're all kind of wanting to strive for. I think life should be, you should have a happy life. Everyone wants to be happy. That's one thing for sure that everyone wants is happiness, I think. And so I think that's what I get out of it. And what the feeling means, you know, what's this all mean? That feeling means life for me, to feel that, you know, to be in the moment right there and then and there, and you could fall at any moment, you know, and will you? That's what I say in my documentary. I say, will you know, adventure is like a line of sight. Stay on that line and be set free. Stray from that line a little and you may find consequence.
Right. I like that. Jocko Willink is another individual that articulates to the importance of, let's say, staying on the path. He has a quote that I really like that I think is useful for me right now, and that is, discipline equals freedom. It's like, yeah, it fucking does, you know?
Yeah, it's hard.
It's not the easy way, you know?
Yeah, I like that. And I'm this is the way I'm thinking about that. It's like, we want to be free out there climbing these mountains and climbing these cliffs, but we got to have discipline to do that. Okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You do. And for somebody who is just listening to this, it's like, oh, you know, Isaac's going to go climb Shasta. I'm going to go climb Shasta. Like, let me do the talking for you just on this thing. Isaac, we don't know each other. We're just meeting each other through a mutual friend. And I think you're an outstanding dude. And I think we would get along really well and could you know, have a wonderful friendship. But my point being, just from what I know from less exposure to climbing than you have, probably, you've done hundreds, if not thousands of hours of training yourself physically, of learning about ropes and rope systems and knots and metal, you know, tools that allow you to do what you're going to do. You've done the trial and error of years and years.
You've got to do it yourself, right, in your room by yourself to remember that stuff. That's what I realized. My friends and I, we started in college doing these times. It was just me and a buddy. It wasn't a bunch of us. And I go over to his house and he'd be like, okay, let's set up a 3-to-1. Okay, let's take that down. Let's set it back up. Okay, let's set up an anchor system, you know, and that's where you gain the experience right there. So I would say, and I have a YouTube channel where I share all my climbs and stuff like that and my hikes. And I tell people, I give them a little disclosure before I say, you know, this is a serious hike. Come prepared for this hike. Know before you go.
Right. And they have a saying in surfing, when in doubt, don't go out, you know? I just think that that's a neat thing to find yourself at a position where now you have the knowledge to both respect the danger that you might not have known was there as a more novice practitioner, but you know, you also have the knowledge to go deeper into the mountains and make bigger goals. And the people that I know that are in my life that, you know, are into these kinds of things, let's say, only continue to grow. Like it's an expansive part of their life. It's not a part of their life that pulls from other parts. I mean, okay, it kind of does because it requires time and money. So that's unfair to say, but it's like, I think about whitewater as an example. I'm not very into the whitewater community or I'm not a very avid rafter, let's say, but I've even in my own life been on several different rivers. The people that I know that are into whitewater are just constantly either putting in the time as guides and sharing their motivation or, you know, going to new and better or different rivers. Certainly that's the case with skiing. It's always like, you know, what's the next bigger mountain to go to. And I just think that that's a healthy thing to have in life. It's certainly better than money being the only opportunity for growth, at least to wish for, you know. There's always a bigger wave to surf. There's always a bigger mountain to climb, you know. And if not bigger, if you get yourself up Everest, then go climb a more difficult one or whatever. There's always that thing that will set you apart, as you said earlier. That's always available. That's always out there. And I think we all realize in life that, like, when we're really doing it, when we're really honoring ourselves, we're preparing for the next opportunity that we have to dance with that. Like, we know it's there. Like, I know that the next time that I'm going to be challenged to ride a wave well is, it already exists. Like, it's already a thing. It's already in space. It's just, I get to decide how I act between now and then. Like it's there in time. So now how well I like honor the ritual of getting to that time is how well I perform there. So that's something that I'm trying to really deal with. And that is like the call to honor the call to adventure. Like the call to adventure is super important. And that's what Jordan Peterson and these other people that try to talk about the hero's journey talk about. It's like the call to adventure is super important, right? The opportunity to go slay the dragon and get the gold or, you know, go face the trauma of our families, you know, in the cave. And, you know, there's all these archetypes, but we all understand it. Everybody that's in the human condition understands the hero's journey as a motif and the call to adventure. But I'm trying to get even more meta, if you like, and say,
yeah,
well, I got to honor the call to adventure. I need to like I need to like not only own it and say, yeah, hey, I'm a skier, or I'm a this, or I'm a that, and I'm a surfer, and hear me roar. But I also have to be able to do that and integrate that into like a responsible, constructive, productive member of society, whether that means I'm teaching other people to do it, whether that, you know, somehow adding value, as you said earlier. Again, we're attached to this idea of value, and for good reason, because value is valuable, right? Like if we need to understand value to then infuse that into all the things that we're putting our time into. And I tell you, I struggle, Isaac, with feeling like I've put enough value into the things that have given me such value. And
yeah.
And I need to figure out how to do that in more and better ways. And I think that the wisdom that I see to tell myself is just consistency is the
I totally understand. I could use a friend for an example. She was leading what she thought a life was, you know, and it's very cheap, boring, you know what I mean? She said her life was boring. She was a mom, you know what I mean? She had kids, and then she hadn't had a job, and she didn't know what to do, you know? And so through the outdoors and through meeting friends and going hiking, and she started climbing, and through this stuff, she has got more value in her life, and she is happier, and she's not just, you know what I mean, just some cog in a wheel, you know what I mean? Sure. She's more because of these experiences. You know, you go out there and you get up this climb that's 90 feet tall or whatever, you know, 50 feet tall, 10 feet tall, and you've accomplished something in life. Remember that. Remember that. That's powerful right there. Remember what you've accomplished in life, because then you can go back in your own life and you can say, oh, I've gone off and done that. And it's not to be cocky, but it's to use it as fuel, so that you're more powerful in your life. You know what I mean? You're not afraid to step into the void.
Right. Right. And I think that something that's worth saying is that not only does that help us grow, give us fuel for the future, let us see what we're made of. And that's a real process, but it also does that somehow for everybody else. How the fuck does that work? I don't know. But it does. I know that it does, because I feel that.
Yep. You know, we're all connected. We're all connected.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And when somebody levels up, when somebody steps out of the, you know, the predetermined and starts putting down new patterns, in some weird existential way, it affects everybody else. And I've actually found a gentleman named Rupert Sheldrake. That talks a lot about this in reality, in, let's say, in a physical sciences sense, and calls it morphogenic fields or morphogenetic fields. And I'm telling you, it's a total, you know, trip, but it's very interesting. And it's this idea that, I mean, I don't know if you're at all interested in some trippy kind of, how would you say, the cutting edge of theoretical physics, in my opinion.
What we get out of going to nature. The Japanese have something on it, and this might be similar, and I'm butchering it. It's called Shinrin-yoku, and it's how nature is a therapy. Basically, sure. People can be healed by nature going out into it. And you can't heal everything, of course. If you walk into the nature with a broken leg, it's not going to do anything. But depression and all these other actual sicknesses too can be healed, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, I feel you. It's you know, something that the Western world, in my opinion, needs more of, at least in the United States. I feel like the places that are suffering so greatly from these psychological illnesses and the extension, the kind of synonymous, symbiotic drug abuse issues are just because this country is pushing so hard on this, you know, kind of death throes of a factory economy where, you know, a certain kind of conservative life and behavior set were to the greatest value of the community, but we're just not there anymore. We're in this entirely, you know, brave new world of interconnectedness, you know, whether or not you buy it on some spiritual woo-woo level, you can't, nobody can dispute this shit. So we're all connected and there's a real responsibility there. And we still seem to be extraordinarily immature collectively with our ability to deal with this because we're using it to send, you know, cat pictures and you know, fail compilations.
That's the one thing. It's like you post a beautiful picture of some great place that should offer you really joy. It gets, you know, nothing. And then, yeah, you post a cat picture and you're viral, you know?
Well, yeah. And I think that evolution is taking place. I think that maturation process is actively taking place. I mean, how would you articulate your need? Because I contend that the artistic impulse is a need to make a movie, to do this conversation with me. Isn't it on some level this compulsion to create real media as an antithesis to fake media, almost as an inoculation to the virus of, look at this beautiful place, now buy the car that we're showing you driving to that
yeah
place, you know yeah look at us, you know, doing this thing, now buy this or that. And you know, I guess there's a place for that, you know, like advertising seems to make the motherfucking world go around. It just
the one where the guy's driving the Range Rover up those stairs, and that place I've been to over there and climbed there, and it's a popular Range Rover commercial where he drives all the way up to the top of this huge, one of the biggest natural arches in the world, limestone. And yeah, it's all for Range Rover advertisement. Yeah. And I bet they totally messed that place up, or maybe they didn't, but I couldn't believe it because I've climbed there and I've been there, and it's just like, geez, man, all for advertising.
The commodification of stuff is a hard thing to take. And, you know, they've been doing it forever, right? It's the story is nothing new, but how to like be a part of it in a way that doesn't just you know, kill
through,
us.
Through things like this conversation, like you're just saying, through my documentary, that's definitely how we can make it, you know, something, at least something that we want instead of, because I hate to sound negative like that, but it's kind of how society pushes you, because you see all these special interest groups, you know, doing what they want because they have the money, and boom, that's what they're doing. So let's do that. Let's push it another way.
Right. That's a really well said, because we know, let's say in, for example, the whitewater and mountain bike and ski and climbing communities, that if we had all the money, shit would only be better for everybody else. There would be more trails to enjoy with your kids. There would be, you know, opportunities to go and climb on rocks everywhere with boulder pads just integrated. And, you know, the trails would be wonderful. And, you know, the surfing beaches would be, you know, immaculate. And who does, you know, where is the money accumulating in our current paradigm? In the hands of people that are drilling into the ground and extracting, you know, flammable liquid.
Just like they want to do more. They want to do crazy stuff, you know. And
the fuck?
Bring pipes across, you know, lands that you shouldn't be doing that. And, you know, it's like, I thought the Greenpeace actually did something. I thought that they, you know, and don't get me wrong, my values are definitely different of those people of Greenpeace, but I thought they definitely proved a point that we need to conserve our environment. But no, it doesn't look like that at all. they didn't listen to any of them.
right. That's been one of the biggest stumbling blocks in my life is just genuinely feeling, maybe in folly, maybe not, you know, in truth, but feeling like I just can't communicate the value of the natural world effectively enough to those that would seek to destroy it, let's say. And to be fair, I haven't had a lot of opportunities to have conversations with, you know, policymakers or whatever, but it's just like, it's so apparently true that for me to even think or even acknowledge, let's say, that there are people that are drill baby drill and that just genuinely don't give a fuck about, you know, the mountains of this world or the oceans of this planet.
Or the rivers and the dams.
Rivers, or the great. I mean, just the recognition that the unspoilt nature of the things that seemingly don't provide us with tangible resource are actually more valuable in the abstract. Much, much, much more valuable than the sum of their parts. That's where a religious or a spiritual sensibility comes about in me, because I'm a fairly, you know, as much as the next person, you know, Western rationalist, was raised in a reductionist kind of just scientific mindset. But I'm crazy enough to try to be like, okay, I'm in beginner chemistry. Before I waste 6 months on thinking about beginner chemistry, I want to go learn about the most fringe, you know, farthest advanced, you know, chemical, you know, sciences around, just so I know what the fuck the deal is. Then I'll start, you know, apprenticing. And in my whole life, the same thing has been true. The people at the forefront don't fucking know anything about what they're talking about. They're building a set of agreements based on premises and have built the wonders of modern
or it's like
technology.
Some council, you know, a bunch of people that just want jobs and just want to get paid a bunch of money and aren't really doing anything. Like one of the questions that you have as a undergraduate there at SOU is, what in your opinion is allowed? What should be allowed in our outdoors, in our national parks? And I think it's kind of a loaded question, because people start loading either side. I mean, maybe that's not the right. Anyways, they start arguing about what should be there and what should be not. Oh, bikes should be allowed. Oh, mountain bikes shouldn't be allowed. But you got to realize, guys, if these guys aren't allowed there, those are the ones that want to conserve this land, that bring it to the lawmakers. You know what I mean? And without all of them being there. So now I'm thinking I would answer that question way differently. I wouldn't argue like I was kind of and have an art more of, I'd have more of a discussion where I'd be like, you know what? All of them need to be there in the right amounts. That way they can all help conserve the land.
Right. They can all have a voice. Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. I agree. Yeah, the problem comes about, doesn't it, when we decide who's the problem? Oh, they're the problem. Oh, no, those other group are the problem. Oh, those people are the problem. It's just never that way. It's just that misunderstanding is the problem. This set of premises that we're accepting as an assumption and we don't, you know, understand fully is the problem. Those, you know, miscommunications are the problem. But, you know, I think we need to build more inroads, don't we? And it seems to be way to do so to join the communities that we see as valuable and see our place in, you know, we've named them, and then to somehow empower those communities to do valuable for more people.
And what better way to advertise your community the right way, I think, with the outdoor industry. You go into Ashland and you can totally see it around town. They've got, you know, it's a climbing, a kayaking community. And I'm not saying they're selling out, you know what I mean? They're not, because you should see the way they do it. It's kind of like you go in there and just by the way, it's kind of, they have some statues and stuff like that, I mean, and art figures and stuff like that. You know, it's a climbing and kayaking and paddling community. It's cool.
Mountain biking and skiing too. I love Ashland.
Yeah.
We went up to the ski park in the summer or spring or fall, I don't remember, but there was no snow, and biked from Mount Ashland to Lithia Park. I've done that
through Four Corners. Yeah.
A lot of fun. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Nice. I agree. And isn't that kind of a native sentiment? To honor the natural world, to regard as holy and sacred the natural, you know, occurrences, the water, the mountain.
You know, I agree. Yeah.
And why in the fuck have we turned away from that in the modern world? I don't know.
It's crazy. Because one of the things that I realized that made me realize and made me ask that question, why have we turned away from this stuff, was when I went to China and I come around at night and I come around the farmland, to where I'm going to my apartment, and I come out on this farmland, and it's this beautiful scene of all these fireflies, I believe, or some sort of their version of a June bug or whatever, lit up, and they were all diving over this tall grass, and you could see the grass green illuminated through their fluorescent, like, transparent bodies, and it's like the craziest LED light show that you've seen at a festival or a rave or anything, but natural. And I could not believe it. And I took my hat off and I'm just like, how can we do what we're doing to this earth? And anyone who says different and says you're a fucking hippie liberal, go fucking hug a tree. No, dude, fuck you, bro. How can you do that? Dude, look how beautiful this stuff is, you know? it really baffles me. And it's, but you know, it's also hard. Damn, it's hard to be an activist and just take off with this stuff and do that, really. Because I have more of, I guess, a rational mind, maybe, or not. I don't know.
Yeah, pragmatism. You know, yeah, and I think the way you know, the way of the internet, the way of constructive behavior as opposed to destructive, the way of communication as opposed to fighting or name calling or you know, identity politics was a big buzzword just a little while ago, because I think on a collective level we're all, regardless of political side, recognizing that tribalism is not constructive. It just shuts down the conversation, and there's a lot of conversations that need to be had, you know. So I think that this is a start. I think, however humble, just identifying ourselves as being people that appreciate, you know, what the earth has to offer, and then just starting there. Like, you know, I struggle with it because part of my psyche is like, yeah, but look at Elon Musk and look at technology and you know, technology, you know, I should just be a technologist, and the you know, advances that we're making are so fascinating. And I am fascinated by technology, and I think it's very interesting to try to conceptualize what we're doing as this hive-minded, you know, band of primates trying to build some kind of computer, you know, mechanistic animal that, you know, succeeds us. But like, aside from that, like, what makes the human experience profound and divine and worth living is all of what we've already been touching on, at least from my experience. And so, you know, whether or not, you know, fucking Skynet turns on in the next, you know, 30, 40, 50 years right. of my lifetime. We might as well have enough, you know, commando, you know, outdoor people that are ready to, you know, be John Connors, because
that's why I love the outdoors. Like, I've got, I don't, because I just got back kind of from a trip and I was using the same bag, but I usually have a bag ready to go. Like,
jump bag, survival bag.
I'm not a prepper. It's just something that I've always done. Like, moving around from China to Oregon, back and forth, I've always lived out of a bag, basically. So it's just easy to keep my stuff that way.
I get it. Well, yeah, man. More power to you. God bless you. Thank you for having the conversation with me.
I'd love to
do it again. You know?
I would love to do it maybe after my Shasta climb, because that, Devin, is going to be a big goal for me, and I believe it's a goal for a lot of people, and they want to maybe experience and know how that went. So I'd love to do it after maybe my Shasta climb.
Let's do it. And I do not know the answer about whether or not the Zoom free membership has a maximum recording.
It doesn't look like it. We've been on for days.
I think it's still going.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna. We'll wrap up here pretty quick. I'll see this file for length. I'll send it to you, and we'll go from there. I'll post it. And very, very interested to talk to you again. You know, best of luck on your climb. Be safe. And
thank you.
And yeah, thank you very much for the time, man. I appreciate it. It's fun to you know, it's fun to talk with you.
Cheers, man. I'll talk to you later, man.
Okay, thank you, sir. How long did we go? I don't know.
Like we started at 6 and it is 7:30.
Okay. So yeah. Let's see.
I think that was an hour and a half.
Okay, so we pause recording.